Although we focused on the first nine verses last time, or eight verses last time, this will give us a good, complete description and set the context. John writes, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth." Just to remind you, this is after the judgment, the great white throne judgment, when the only thing left now are the redeemed. "For the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband." This, since we looked at this last week, I'll just kind of recap the highlights. This is, I think, when the picture of the Jewish wedding feast, when the wedding is consummated, when the new heavens and the new earth come down and Jesus, the groom, takes his bride, is united with his bride. "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them.'" And we're going to read a lot more about God's dwelling among men in the rest of the chapter. "And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will no longer be any death, nor there will no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. And he who sits on the throne said, 'Behold, I am making all things new.' And he said, 'Write, for these words are faithful and true.' And he said to me, 'It is done.'" Reminiscent of the words of redemption on the cross, "It is finished." Here, "It is done." The culmination of redemptive history has come to fruition. "And it's been brought about by he who is the Alpha and the Omega. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. And I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life without cost. He who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." And we're going to pick up right here today. "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, 'Come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb.' And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal, clear jasper. It had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and names were written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, 3 gates on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. The one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. The city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as its width. And he measured the city with the rod, 1,500 miles its length and width and height are equal. And he measured its wall, 72 yards according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements. The material of the wall was jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass. The foundation stones of the wall were adorned with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation stone was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardis, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysophras, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each one of the gates was a single pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God the Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And the city has no need of the sun or of the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God has illumined it, and its lamp is the Lamb. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it in the daytime, for there will be no night there. Its gates will never be closed, and they will bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. And nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. You know, one of the most remarkable promises that Christ made while he was here was to his disciples on the night of his arrest when he said, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and take you into myself, that where I am, there you may be also. This is a description, a wonderful description of that place that was promised. In the previous passage, the place that the Lord had prepared descended into the eternal state, and this city that's described is going to be the capital city of the new heaven and the new earth. And what's provided for us, I don't think is enough for us to, certainly not enough for us to fully comprehend all that heaven's going to be like. But it does give us a glimpse of a few details that leave us intrigued, certainly interested, and I believe in great anticipation for that opportunity we're going to have to see the rest. This is captivating, the beauty, the majesty, the glory of this New Jerusalem. And the city itself is described in more detail than the rest of the eternal state. Will heaven be more than this eternal, than this glorious city? I don't know. Maybe. But whatever it is, whatever all of heaven, whatever encompasses all of heaven, this will be the focal point, because this is where the presence of God will dwell. So let's kind of walk. We got a long way to go and a lot of things to look at, but I think we can get through this chapter if I don't get bogged down too much. This angel appeared to John again in verse 9. He is identified as one of the angels that had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues. So he was one of the angels that was associated with the judgment, the pouring out of the wrath of God on the city. But now that work is done. The wrath of God's been poured out. That aspect of God's work among men is finished. So this angel becomes the one to reveal the glory of heaven to John. And he came and spoke with John, saying, come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And the New Jerusalem is described, this city is described as the Bride of the Lamb. And that title was originally a designation for the church. And I think the reason that this New Jerusalem is called the Bride of the Lamb is because it's characterized by the nature of the people who inhabit the city. And the bride is the wife of the Lamb because the marriage supper has taken place, the betrothal period is over, the celebration is over, and when we enter into the eternal state with our Redeemer and Lord, that will bring about the final consummation of this marriage imagery. And as the angel reveals this to John, it says he carried him away in the spirit. He took him on a journey to see what he could never have seen in the natural realm. He took him to see things that were spiritual realities, but nonetheless very real things. I think I've mentioned this on several occasions. We know that there is an unseen dimension among us, right? There's a spiritual realm that only a few have been given the opportunity to see a glimpse of it. And so, but that doesn't, the fact that we don't see it doesn't mean it's not reality. So what John is seeing here is not something that's mystical. It's something that is real. It just exists in a different dimension than what we realize, what we can comprehend in our limited, with our current limitations. So John, the angel took John to a great and high mountain. We see here in verse 10. And he showed him the holy city, Jerusalem, that came down out of heaven. It comes down out of heaven because God is its originator. God is its architect. God is its builder. That's what Hebrews 11:10 tells us, that heaven is the city, this city whose architect and builder is God. And I think verse 11, he showed me the whole, verse 10, he showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. This is significant because the glory of God will be fully manifest among God's redeemed. The fullest expression of that glory is going to permeate the entire recreated universe. And the glory of God is the sum total of those attributes that we have come to appreciate about Him. And they're going to be manifest in this blazing light, this light that cannot be shielded, light that can't be dimmed. It's so bright that John goes on to say, her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. That the idea of brilliance is that it radiates. It's light that radiates and penetrates and pierces any darkness that would be there. There's no darkness here. This heavenly city appeared to John to look like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. That word jasper is a transliteration of a Greek word that iaspis. I don't think it refers to the same modern stone that is kind of opaque. I think most interpreters agree that the best way to understand this is referring to a stone like a crystal clear diamond that is unblemished. So this capital city is pictured as a huge, flawless diamond that's. And what happens if you take a perfectly cut diamond and you shine a beam of light into it? It just refracts everywhere. And I think that's maybe the picture that we're getting here. The blazing glory of God will be refracted through this city to reflect toward in every aspect of God's new creation, the new heaven and the new earth. Brilliance. Verse 12. It had a great and high wall with 12 gates, 12 angels. It had specific dimensions. At these gates were stationed angels. Who served as attendants to the glory of God. I don't think they're not going to be angels protecting anything, because everything that's a threat to the glory of God, to the peace and perfection of heaven, it's all been taken care of, right? It's all confined now at this point to the lake of fire. The gates had names on them representing the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. It also had gates that were on them, in verse 14, on the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb were written on them. What do these gates signify? What do they represent? Well, you've got the covenant, the old covenant of that God made with the people of Israel. Then you've got a new covenant that God made through Jesus Christ, through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. And you've got both covenants represented in this city. The names of the 12 tribes on 12 of the gates, the names of the 12 apostles on the other gates. These gates were stationed three on one side, three on another side, three on another side, three on the last side. Which is reminiscent of the way that the tribes camped in the Old Testament, the way they camped around the tabernacle. And this layout of the city gates pictures God's favor on all of His redeemed people under both the Old and the New Covenant. The angel took this is a curious thing, but the angel took this golden measuring rod and he measured the city and its gates and its walls. And he found out, he discovered that the city is laid out as a square, the length as great as the width. And he measured the city with the rod 1,500 miles, 12,000 stadia. There's different speculations as to whether this is a literal 1,500 miles. Some people say it's as much as 15,000 miles. Some estimate it to be about 1,380 miles. You know what? I don't know exactly how big it is, but I know this. God knew from before the foundations of the world how many people would need to fit in it, so He knew exactly how big to build it from the start. And it'll be perfect size to hold all of God's redeemed throughout all ages. And some suggest that these dimensions, some think these dimensions suggest that it's built like a cube. That's what I happen to think is described. Others think it's shaped like a pyramid, that it's 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles and 1,500 miles high at the center, so that it would be shaped like a pyramid. But I would not lean that way, because typically the pyramids reflected the worship of pagans rather than followers of the true God. So I think it's like a cube. If it were superimposed, if a city this size and it is 1,500 miles, literally, a city that size superimposed over the map of the United States would go from the border of Canada to the Gulf of Mexico and from Colorado to the East Coast. It'd be massive, and then that tall, going that far vertically. Will a vertical construction of a city be a problem? Not in a realm of existence, a dimension of existence that we don't understand now. The angel measured the city's walls at 72 yards. I think that's most likely its thickness. But it also emphasizes that these measurements are according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements, which I think lets us know that these dimensions are not mystical, they're literal dimensions. And that a yard is a yard, a foot is a foot, a mile is a mile, whether it's measured by a man or an angel. So I think that's the significance of that. The material of this 72-yard thick wall is jasper. I think it's the same crystal clear diamond-like stone that was mentioned back in verse 11. And the city, the wall of the city is translucent, but also the city itself was pure gold like clear glass. And they're clear so that everything in the city allows the glory of God to radiate through it, to permeate. There's no hidden, nothing, no darkness, nothing hidden. And some people have speculated, well, if everything is crystal clear, what are you going to do for privacy there? And I think that's an irrelevant question, because there won't be any need for privacy there. Nothing going on that needs to be hidden. So the foundation stones of this wall were adorned with every kind of precious stone, 12 of which are named. And all the names of those, if those stones are the same stones that we would find by the same name today, they would provide this a brilliant array of color and shapes that I think would just reflect the beauty and the creativity, the creative genius of God. They would be the jasper, we said, was identified as a diamond. The sapphire is a blue stone. The chalcedony is like a sky blue in color. The emerald, it would be green. The sardonyx would be red with white stripes. The sardis would be shades of red. The chrysolite would be of gold or a yellow-hued stone. The eighth would be a yellow, green, or blue hue. The beryl is found in those colors. The topaz, a yellowish green. The chrysophase, a gold-tinted green stone. The jacinth would be violet-colored. And the amethyst, also purple. So I think what maybe the attempt here is to do is to describe for us something that is just breathtakingly beautiful. We won't get tired of admiring the beautiful surroundings of our eternal home. And the next thing that is described is the 12 gates, which are 12 pearls. But these pearls are like no pearl ever produced by an oyster. They're produced, they each one is big enough to be a gate for this city. I don't know how high the gate is. If the wall of the city is as tall as the dimensions of the city, then the pearl's going to be 1,400 or 1,500 miles in diameter. But I don't know if the gate will be that big. Doesn't matter. This giant pearls. And the streets of the city are pure gold. This is what we see now. We're transported from outside to inside the city. And the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. I think this is a quality of gold that we can't even comprehend. That shows the purity and the perfection of everything that is there. And it needs to be transparent, because what's the focal point? The focal point is the glory of God that's being transmitted and radiated through every aspect of this place. And John notes here that there was no temple in it, because the Lord God the Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. This is probably, in my mind, maybe one of the most important features of heaven, one of the most exciting features of heaven. How much, just to consider this question, you don't have to answer it out loud, but just how precious is sweet, unhindered fellowship with God right now? But how difficult is it? How much do we struggle, really? How much do we struggle really to put aside the distractions and the thoughts and the pressing needs of daily life and really get to just focus on enjoying sweet, uninterrupted fellowship with God. It's glorious when it happens, right? It's wonderful. But it's hard to get there and harder to stay there. Just being honest. Not so in this setting. Man will enjoy perfect communion with God the Father and His Lamb. Believers, we will finally be in the fullest expression the true worshipers whom God seeks, as was described by Jesus to the woman at the well. There will be no need to go anywhere to worship. There's no temple. There's no designated place, because everywhere will be filled with His glory. Everyone who is there will have full, unhindered, uninhibited access in the presence of His glory. Life will be worship, and worship will be the life of everybody there. And there will never be a moment in that eternal state, that perfect, glorified eternal state, where we will not be enjoying unhindered, perfect fellow communion with God. It'll be a constant reality. That's exciting. John notes that the city has no need of the sun or of the moon to shine on it, because the glory of God has illumined it, and its lamp is the Lamb. This present earth, this current world in which we live, is totally dependent upon the cycles of light and darkness. But in the new heaven and the new earth, those are going to be not needed. The glory of God will illumine this heavenly city. And because everything in this heavenly city is translucent and the glory radiates throughout all of this new creation, it'll light everything, no matter where it is. There will be, its lamp will be the glory of the Father and the Lamb. Now, there's some things here that pose a little bit of a challenge from an interpretational standpoint. Here in verse 24, the nations will walk by its light. The kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Wait a minute, where are these coming from? Well, I think properly translated and understood, since we know there are no more nations, there's just a redeemed people. But what's this redeemed people made up of? People from every tribe, every tongue, and every nation. I think what this indicates to us, verse 24, the nations will walk by this light. The kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Verse 26, and they will bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. I think what this is telling us is that there's not going to be any national distinction. In eternity, your nationality as an American means what? Nothing. Your existence as a part of what we might call or used to call the middle class, or if you're in the upper class or the lower class, that distinction, that designation means what? Nothing. We're all equal. We all bring our glory. The poor can bring as much glory into the kingdom to reflect the glory of God as a godly king. No social class, no social distinctions, no class distinctions, but people from every tribe and tongue and nation. Jews and Gentiles will be united as God's people. Every believer fully equal in this eternal city. Everybody at the same level. And throughout what we see in verse 10, in the daytime, for there will be no night there, its gates will never be closed. There will be an eternal state of daylight. But there will be no need to close the wall, the gates like they did in the ancient cities. The ancient walled cities closed the gates at night because they wanted to keep out unwanted invaders. There will not be any need for that because this city is completely secure. And it will be perfectly holy because verse 27 tells us nothing unclean and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it. It's going to be protected from anything that's an abomination to God. But and the only ones who will be there are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now these next the next verses in chapter 22 continue to describe for us the things that are associated with this dwelling, but we'll pick up right there next time. Are there any questions or comments or thoughts concerning these descriptive words?